We'll start the new Mishnah on Daf Nun Aleph, Amud Aleph, three lines down from the top. And we're discussing Hatmana. And the question is, we have something that's not Mosif Hevel. It's something that preserves the heat, but it doesn't intensify the heat. And that's going to be the discussion here in our Mishnah. Let's say, for example, on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do any sort of hatmana, even in something that's not Mosif Hevel, even if it's only preserving the heat. However, let's say you had a situation where you did the hatmana the way you were supposed to on Erev Shabbos, and now, let's say, it got exposed. You know, you put your tavshil in an insulation, and the question is, can you replace hatmana on Shabbos itself? Just to replace hatmana that took place on Erev Shabbos. You may recall that in the previous perek, perek Kira, we discussed the situation where he left his pot on the fire on Erev Shabbos, and the question was whether he could replace it on Shabbos itself. And here we have, distinctions between situations where he is holding on to the pot and he's just putting it back, or he put it down. You may recall those discussions. So here also, with regard to Atmana, it's the basic, identically same principle. It's just to try to replace the Atmana that took place on Erev Shabbos. Now on Shabbos, he wants to get it back to that same situation. He took out whatever he needs for his meal, and the balance he wants to put back into the Hatmana situation. Now, as a general rule, let's say he did no Hatmana at all on Erev Shabbos, then he's starting with a brand new Hatmana on Shabbos, that's prohibited. And that's the opening line in our Mishnah. Loki so mivodjom. If he didn't start with Hatmana on Erev Shabbos, lo yichasenu mishetechshach. On Shabbos itself, he's not allowed to do what's called Tchilas Hatmana. He can't start a Hatmana situation, even if it's not Mosif Hevel, even if it only preserves the heat. However, Kisou, in the case where he actually had prepared the Hatmana on Erev Shabbos, so everything everything was fine, everything was set on Erev Shabbos, but then in his gala, it got exposed. Meaning whatever was surrounding the pot in order to insulate its heat now got exposed. So the Mishnah says, Mutar l'chasoso. He's allowed to replace the Hatmana because he's only replacing the original Hatmana which he set into motion on Erev Shabbos. Now here we have a gigantic machlokas Rishonim had to interpret this Mishnah. Some Rishonim say that they're willing to go very far with this, that Nizgala would even apply if it became uncovered on Erev Shabbos itself, as long as he didn't do it deliberately. Let's say, for example, he sets up a half hour before Shabbos, he sets up his Hatmana, he insulates his pot, and then 10 minutes later, for some reason, the insulation, the material fell. So some Rishonim go as far as to say that even though going into Shabbos there was no Hatmana, it was not covered, nevertheless he's allowed to cover it on Shabbos because he did the act of Hatmana. Other Rishonim, the Balei HaTosfos, they're of the opinion, no, that Kisou means he covered it. It was in a state of Hatmana going into Shabbos. So already when it became dark and Shabbos entered, there was a state of Hatmana. And then subsequently, it became exposed. And in that case, he's allowed to replace the Atmana. But if there was no Atmana, even 1 minute into Shabbos, then you're in a situation of Tchilas Atmana. The fact that he did Atmana on Erev Shabbos, that's irrelevant. Everybody agrees, by the way, that if on Erev Shabbos he himself took off the Atmana, he himself exposed the pot, then that's already going to be Tchilas Atmana. That's going to be prohibited on Shabbos. Memalei es hakiton v'nosein l'sacha sakar o sacha sakeses. Now, what we're talking about now is a different kind of hatmana. Your classic hatmana is for the sake of maintaining the heat. However, there is another kind of hatmana. It's a little bit, shall we say, rare, but in some cases, especially during the hot months, what he wants to make sure is that something cold, let's say he has cold water, maintains its temperature as being cold. So sometimes if you take something that's cold and you submerge it into sand or whatever it might be, it remains cold. So it preserves the cold. That's mutter. And we're going to see a gigantic machlokas as we go through the sugya about this, but our Mishnah seems to be taking the position that the Isur Atmana, when it applies, only applies if you're trying to either maintain the heat or intensify the heat. But if you're trying to maintain just the cold, that you're allowed to do. And what they used to do is they used to take a jug of cold water, and it was classic for them to put it under a pillow, under some sort of cushion, and that would prevent the hot summer climate from heating up the water. We're going to have another case as we go along where he does atmana on something cold, let's say cold water, for example, and he wants to warm it up, but he's not interested in heating it up. In other words, when you talk about solid food, you know, you want to eat your cholent, so you insulate it in a way that it'll remain hot. Sometimes you have something that has a chill in it, and you want to just take off the chill. And the question is whether you're allowed to do atman in such a way that it'll warm up the water without boiling the water. Om Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel Mutal Lahatmin Esatzonen. So Rav Yehuda, in the name of Shmuel, understands our Mishnah, the last part of our Mishnah, Memalia Sakiton, as permitting insulation to maintain something that's cold and keep it cold. Om Rav Yosef, my Kamashman Tanina. Why do I need you, Rabbi Yehuda, to tell me this? It's in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Memali adam kitom and osein tachas hakar or tachas hakeses," that you're allowed to take a jug of water, and it's cold, and you're allowed to insulate it so that it'll retain its cold temperature. Amalei Abaye, Abaye terms to Rabbi Yosef, and he says, "Tuva kamashman," that this statement of Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel has a great deal to teach us. If we only had our Mishnah, Hava, I mean, I would have suggested that Mili Davar She'ein Darko Lahatmin, that when does the Mishnah allow you to do Atmana, to keep something cold that's only in something that is normally kept cold? In other words, it's a Davar She'ein Darko Lahatmin. Like, for example, cold water. You don't usually do any atman on cold water, so it's very unusual that you would do atman on cold water, in this case for the purpose of maintaining its cold temperature. That's a very unusual kind of atman, and it wasn't included in the original gzeira, in the original enactment. Avol dovesh darko lahatmin. But let's say you have something that normally you would warm up, and you would heat it up and then put a hatmana, you would insulate it. Like, for example, let's say you had a tavshil, that in this case, he wants to keep it cold. But normally, that tavshil, you'd want to keep it warm, so that the classic enactment of hatmana, the gzeira hatmana, would apply to this object, if you will, to this chefetz. You know, he has a chefetz that normally would be subject to hatmana. Most people would do so. And the question is, maybe the Chazal made a gzeira that says hatmana is prohibited in one of two scenarios. This is the Hava Mina before Rabbi Yehuda. Scenario number one is when you're actually heating or maintaining the heat of your tavshil, your hot pot. And scenario number two is where you have a certain substance, a certain food, and you want to keep it cold. But that food would normally lend itself to hatmana, to the first category of hatmana, of maintaining its heat. Kamash Malon, this is what Rabbi Yehuda Omar Shmuel is giving me, an absolute rule. Mutul lahat min etzatzone. Straight across the board, there are no exceptions. Even if you have something that normally would be subject to a classic hatmona to maintain its heat, but your purpose is to keep it cold, you're allowed to do hatmona. I'll give you an example. Some people like to eat cold chicken on Shabbos. I don't know, that's what they like to do, or cold fish. So if you're talking about water is not usually subject to hatmona. So therefore, if you want to keep it cold, that for sure would be mutter, and that's explicit in the Mishnah. But Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel wants to take this Mishnah one step further and apply it not only to water or things of that sort, but even to a pot of food, like chicken or whatever it might be, or fish. So you like to eat cold fish. So you want to maintain its cold temperature, you're allowed to do hatmona. But as we'll see, that's not universally accepted. Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rebbe. There's a whole question here about whether it should say Omar Rebbe over here. There were so many different Rav Hunas back in the day. That was a common name. And it's not clear which Rav Huna we're talking about. The original first Rav Huna, first generation Rav Huna, who was the Rosh Hashiva in his time, he actually got Torah from Rebbe towards the end of Rebbe's life. So it could be the Girsa here could be maintained, and it's Om Rav Huna Om Rebbe. Others have the Girsa Om Rav Huna Om Ra. Asur lahat min esatzonein. Wow, we're going back to Rebbe Yehuda Anasi. And it's very odd that in our Mishnah, there's an anonymous Mishnah, it's not Mishnah, and it was obviously edited by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and it says that you're allowed to be matmin tzonin, but Rebbe himself was of a different opinion. So the Gemara asks, "Vatanya Rebbe hitir lahatmin esatzonin." So we have a recorded transmission of Torah that Rebbe was matir hatmona b'tzonin lo kasha. Ha makami delishmei mi Rebbe Yishmael Rebbe Yosi v'ha libasa delishme. Rebbe's original opinion on his own was that hatmona should be prohibited straight across the board, whether you're insulating something to maintain its heat or to maintain its cold temperature. It's all included in one enactment. But then Rebbe rescinded his original position in deference to Rebbe Yossi, because Rebbe Shmuel, who's the son of Rebbe Yossi, is going to transmit exactly what his father Rebbe Yossi thought about Atmana Bitsonin. Ki Hadi Yosef Rebbe. We have now a transmission of Rebbe who was sitting V'Omar, and he made a declaration, Asu Lahatmin Esatsonin. I would add the word Afilu Esatsonin. So even Tzonein, Rebbe said, is Asur. Amalafan Rebbe Shmuel, Rebbe Yossi. Abba, I want to tell you something, Rebbe. My father, Rebbe Yossi, Hitir lahat min esatzonein. He found it permissible. Now keep in mind that Rebbe does not have to really kowtow, so to speak, or change his opinion simply because of Rebbe Yossi. But nevertheless, there's a certain respect that Rebbe has for Rebbe Yossi. Omar kvar hora zaken. That this Rebbe Yossi is called a zaken. He's from the earlier generation. He's one of the scholars. And therefore, once he has already ruled, I'm going to withhold my ruling. Meaning it's not right for me, it's not proper for me, after the passing of one of the greats of the previous generation, to contradict his psak. And the Gemara makes a comment about this. Omer Rav Papa, Bo re'e kama mechavavin zed ze. Look at the respect that the Tanoim had one for the other. She'ilu Rabbi Yossi Kayam. If Rabbi Yossi were alive, and there was some sort of a debate between Rabbi Yossi and Rebbe, Hayakofu fi Yoshev lifnei Rebbe, he would subjugate himself before Rebbe. He considered Rebbe to be the giant of that generation. and he would not insist on his version or his understanding of halacha against that of Rebbe. Dehar Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosi, Dememali Mokam Avosav Havi, VeKafuf Yoshev Lufnei Rebbe. And not only would Rabbi Yosi have been kafuf, he would have accepted the authority of Rebbe. Rabbi Shmuel, who fills in for his father, Rabbi Yosi, and Rabbi Shmuel is the next great Tana of the next generation. Rebbe is sort of in between the two. Rabbi Shmuel is going to be a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva, and very often disagrees with Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Shmuel is great on his own, and he himself, who filled his father's place, he stepped into his father's shoes after Rabbi Yossi had died, but nevertheless, kafuf Yoshev lifnei Rebbe. And nevertheless, despite that both Rabbi Yossi the father and Rabbi Shmuel the son were both kafuf to Rebbe, nevertheless, ka'amar kfar hora zaken. If there was a psak that was issued by Rabbi Yossi in this case, the zaken, then Rebbe says, I'm not going to disagree. Now again, you may ask the following question. I mean, deference and respect and cherishing one or the other, that's all great, and many agadotis talk about the greatness of the Chachamim, how they respected one another, even though they disagreed. But why would he change his halachic psak? And I believe the answer might be because we're talking about the generation of instituting the Gzeira. In other words, the Gzeira was really fresh, this whole Perek that we're learning about, Atmana, this was an original enactment, and the question is, what was the extent or the scope and the application of this enactment here, since, you know, it was still in its formation stage, right? It's still an embryo, and the issue is whether or not we should go this far with the enactment or not that far. Once it was a, you know, what we call Kochta Teira Adif, there was a Psak Lekula, then if there's deference and there's respect one time for another, then leave it as is. Rebbe is not going to undermine what Rabbi Yossi had already paskin. Amalei Rav Nachman Lidaru Avde. Rav Nachman had a servant by the name of Daru. The Atman Litzonen. So Rav Nachman turns to his servant and he says, take some cold food and insulate it for me. The Icy Lemaya. The Achim Kafila Arma, and do even more for me. I want you to bring me water that's heated by a non-Jew. Now, Rav Nachman here is teaching us two different chidushim. One, that Hatmana does not extend to the case of insulating cold food to keep it cold. And number two, that if a guy heats up water for you, I don't know if you've ever been on a plane, and they bring you a cup of coffee on the plane, and you're not flying with El Al, so you might have thought to yourself, am I allowed to drink this coffee that was heated up by the staff of Alitalia, whatever your favorite airline is, right? Those who fly Lufthansa, right? So the answer is that's not considered Bishul Akum, and we'll see why in just a second. But these were the two halachas that Rav Nachman wanted to demonstrate. Shoma Rabbi Ami ve'ikpid. Rabbi Ami was not a happy camper. Om Rav Yosef, my time of ikpid. I don't understand. Why should Rav Ami have any problem here objecting to Rav Nachman? Ki Rav Vosavit. Rav Nachman just reflecting that which he was taught by his Rebbein. Chada ki Rav, chada ki Shmuel. And he had two great Rebbein, Rav Nachman. And he was reflecting their rulings. Number one, Kishmuel. The Omer Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, as we started this sugya, Mutal Ahatmin Esatzone. So what claim, what argument can you have against Shmuel for relying on this psak, against Rav Nachman for relying on this psak of Shmuel, his Rebbe, that you're allowed to do Atmanu with Sonen, Ukarav, the Omer Rav Shmuel, Omer Rav Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak, Amarav Kol Shehu Nechal Kamo Shehu Chai Einbo Mishum Bishulei Nachrim. Anything that's eaten raw, and for whatever reason you want to cook it, but it's fine and edible raw. So let's say vegetables, for example, you could eat a raw carrot, and the guy cooks a carrot for you. Then it's not Bishul Akum. You know, classic Bishul Akum would be, let's say, fish. I don't know, today's world, I don't know what to say. But when I was growing up, nobody ate uncooked fish. Now I heard there's even something called uncooked meat. Sushi meat. I don't know. It's hard for me to believe. But let's say a guy would cook eggs or meat or fish for you. That would be bishalakim because it's eino nechal chai. But water, you can drink water as is. I was told that if a guy toasts bread for you, you're allowed to eat it because you could have eaten the bread without toasting. In any event, why was Rav Ami so makbid here? So the answer is, Husavar Adam Choshev Shaini. In other words, there's a principle called Dover Shachirim Osrim Iyatom Arashoy Lahati Bifneim. If somebody thinks that something's Osur, then you don't go ahead and if you're one of the representatives of the Torah giants of the generation and you're matir it, and they start thinking, well, what's going on over here? Why is he being matir? We should aser it. So the gedolim, the greats of the generation, that's called an adam chashuv, have to be very, very careful, super careful. When they do something that's in the public eye, they should take the high road. They should be even more stringent. And although Rav Ami understood very well that Rav Nachman had his two great Ravim to rely on, but he felt that he shouldn't be so quick to be matir something publicly since he's an Adam Choshev. And therefore he shouldn't instruct his servant to have the guy warm up the, you know, heat up the water for him. He shouldn't instruct the servant to do atmana in cold. You know, people might suspect this Adam Choshev of Nachman, who's one of the Gedolim, of not following the law meticulously. The Mefarshim say that Rav Nachman himself didn't consider himself an Adam Choshev. He was so humble that even though he knew that an Adam Choshev has to be very careful, but he wasn't Machshev himself. Torah Rabbanu, we learned in a Braisa. Afal pi sha'amru ein tom nimafilu bedover she'enim osif hevel mishachas sheicha. That as far as hatmana after dark, meaning when Shabbos has started, we're not allowed to do any hatmana, even in a dover she'enim osif hevel, it's only there to maintain the heat. So on Erev Shabbos, this hatmana would be mut, but on Shabbos itself, it's asur. In bala hosif mosif, if he wants to add to a hatmana that already exists, he can do so. Now, when we read this Gemara, that bala hosif mosif, we get the impression, like, let's say he's got he's got a top shield that's wrapped around, insulated, and he wants to add more insulation. But you would think, I'm just introducing the next Gemara, you would think that he's not allowed to change the atmana, you know, strip the original atmana and replace it with a brand new atmana. That would be tchila b'shabbos, which is prohibited. And it's only bala hosif. He's only adding. Let's say he has it wrapped around and he wants to add another wrapping. But that's not true. Keitzadu osa, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, notel es hasdinim umeniach es haglufkerin. In other words, he can remove that which is a lower kind of hatmono and replace it with a superior atmana. So he started with tzdinim, which are very thin sheets, and now he removes the sheets and he wraps around his tavshil with glufkarin. I mean, we all know what glufkarin are, right? Well, glufkarin are heavy coats or clothing that are much thicker and more effective in hatmana than the tzdinim. Or nota glufkarin umeniach hasdinim. Sometimes he wants to slow down the process of hatmana, and he wants to remove dafka the glufkarin, which is too heavy of hatmana, in order to slow the process down and replace that with sdinim, which is a lower key kind of insulation. And basically, we see from Rav Shimon Gamliel that he understood in bola hosif mosif that you're allowed to actually change the atmana on Shabbos itself. Again, as long as you're not moving any muktzah. And v'cheinoya Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer lo asru el. Oh, okay. We'll get to lo asru el lo so mechem. I just want to emphasize this first point, and that is that it's a din in the tavshil and the ma'is hatmona. What I mean to say is, we look at this tavshil and we ask, with regard to this very same tavshil, did he do a ma'is hatmona on Erev Shabbos, going into Shabbos? And if he did so, then this tavshil lends itself to any method of atmana. Why? Because he did his atmana yesterday. It's like the atmana has an impact on the tavshil. It changes the status of the tavshil, and this tavshil now is a hatmanadika tavshil. Which actual atmana do you have, glufkarin or stidim? That's secondary. So it's never going to be considered a tchilas hatmana if this tavshil going into Shabbos was already in a state, in a status of Hatman. But now we want to know a different thing. And that is, what happens if you want to take the Hatmana that was done in one pot, take the food that was heated Erev Shabbos, insulated on Shabbos in its pot, and you want to pour the contents from one pot into another pot. And that's the second ruling here of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Lo asru, when it comes to hatmana, the only Isra hatmana applies, that will be also mecham. In other words, you heated it up in a certain pot, and now you want to do hatmana on that pot, on Shabbos. That's the problem. Aval pino mi mecham lo mecham mutar. If he demonstrates that he wants to cool things off, that's the general direction, because obviously if he wants to maintain the heat, he should do so in the original pot. The walls of the pot are very hot, and instead he pours the contents of his pot into a second pot. Immediately it's going to cool off. Now he just wants to maintain the heat on a lower level. So in such a case, we're going to say the following, that pina mi mecham le mecham mutar. Hashta kuri ka makirle. Now he's cooling it off by pouring it into a second pot. Artuche ka mirtachle. Are you afraid that he might come to boil it up? Right, we always say that the reason for atmana is because when he does atmana and he's so eager to maintain the heat and even increase the heat, if he comes on Shabbos and he sees, wait a minute, this is not good. It's not hot enough. I want to intensify the heat, and I'm urgent. I'm in a big rush. The guests are coming in. So he may inadvertently do something that he's not allowed to do. You know, Shemi Yatmin Beremetz. He might even put it inside coals or something like that. But if he has demonstrated that, on the contrary, he's now so happy with the hot pot that it's too hot, and he wants to cool it off, so he pours it into a second pot, that's mutter. Okay. Now, we're going to go back to the Braisa, and we said that if you had a pot that was insulated on Erev Shabbos, and you took out the contents of the pot, you're allowed to replace the Hatmana. But now we have to worry about the following. When he replaces that mana, let's say that mana was something that's mukta. We'll give an example of the shearings, the wool shearings of a sheep. So we have to really worry about mukta over here now. If the insulation surrounds the pot on all sides, including the top, then, you know, he wants to open up the pot, you know, remove the lid, and inadvertently and absolutely he's going to move mukta. If we assume that the insulation itself, that material, is mukta. So it says over here, again, it's all part of the same braisa. It says, Taman v'kisa b'davar anitel b'shabes. So if that mana was with something that's not muktzah. We had all sorts of cloths and things like that that are not muktzah. Then that's fine. No problem. He can lift up the lid, and if the whatever's on top of the lid is not muktzah anyway, so he can move that. But what about otaman bedover she'eino nitol b'shabbos? The kisa bedover anitol b'shabbos. He's got a lid that covers the pot, but on top of the lid, as part of that money insulating the top, he has something that's muktzah, like the case I gave you before about the wool shearings. Hareze notel umachzir. He's allowed to lift up the lid and take the pot out. Now, how does he lift up the lid? So the answer is that the lid has a ring to it. It has some sort of a way that you can pick up the lid. And the lid itself is not muktzah. And he was mechasa, he covered it with something that's muktzah, but he can get access to the top of the lid without moving muktzah. Now obviously when he lifts up the lid, the muktzah is going to move in this direction and that direction. And that's okay, because that's called tiltul min atzad. We'll discuss that a little bit later. O shetamen bedover anitol b'shabbos, v'kisa bedover she'eno nitol b'shabbos. And this is a pretty interesting case here. He has the atmana with something that's not muktzah, but the actual covering over the pot is muktzah. Now he's really in trouble. Now again, what would be a covering that's muktzah over the pot? You'd have to talk about something, let's say, that has value in the market and he's a professional. I'm just giving one example. And those kind of objects are muktzah. Maybe he was desperate and he didn't have anything to use for atmana, so he took something that was muktzah. So how's he going to get out of this one? So the Braisa says, stipulates, im haya megula miktsaso notel umachzir. The only way that he'd be able to take out the pot in this case, because the kisui, the covering of the pot, was with muktzah, is conditional on the fact that there's something above, you know, above the lid, which will allow him to somehow lift up that lid in a way, because it's megula b'miktsas, and then he can pour out the contents of his pot through that gilui b'miktsas. But v'im lav, if he's in trouble because the entire pot is covered with muktzah in such a way that he cannot even get access to the contents of the pot and pour them out without lifting up the muktzah, then it's asur. And now we turn to daf nun aleph amud beis. Eino notel umachzir. In such a case, he's not able to remove his pot, and certainly he won't be able to replace his pot. So again, the basic principle that we just established is that, yes, we will allow indirect movement of muktzah to get his pot out of the hatmana situation, but if he has no access to the contents of this pot to remove them from the pot without moving muktzah, then he's going to have to get invited to someone else's house for Shabbos lunch. Now the Mishnah records a machlokes regarding the Oresh Shel Pishtin Daka, and the Braisa that we're about to learn picks up on this machlokes, and specifically the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanakhama held that you have the when you would comb out the flax, and he also has a case of sawdust, if you recall, then if it becomes very thin, very fine, then Rabbi Yehuda says that's a davar amosif hevel, and that's also even on Erev Shabbos. Why? Because it's daka, so we have to keep perspective on the word daka. And the Orishal Pishlin Daka Rei He Kizevel. We said that Zevel was one of the materials listed in our Mishnah as a Dovra Mosif Hevel, which is also even on Erev Shabbos. Okay. Now we get to a different statement of Rabbi Yehuda, and that is Meinicha Mecham Al Gabi Mecham Ukedera Al Gabi Kedera. And you may be familiar with this in a different formulation from the laws of a blech. And you're allowed to put something on top of the pot. For example, you could put a pot on top of a pot, because then we're not talking about an intense heat. Apparently he's not so interested in such an intense heat. And you can put a kettle of water on top of a kettle of water. So you have a hot kettle of water with boiling water in it, you're allowed to put another kettle of water on top of it. And here we're going to have a machlokas rishonim. Is it possible that the top kettle might get to such a boiling point that it would be an isur bishul? He's going to take it off before it gets to that point, but maybe we should be afraid that he might forget about it. So some rishonim are very machmir here, but most rishonim on mekil. And in all cases, they're going to allow you to put a kettle on top of a kettle. Again, you have to be very careful, make sure that the top kettle doesn't become boiled, the water doesn't get boiled. Now Rabbi Yehuda says, but the flip side, kedera al gabi mecham u mecham al gabi kedera, that's prohibited. So one of these two cases we understand, the other we don't. What we do understand is mecham al gabi kedera. The kedera, the pot of hot food, is very, very hot. And many Rishonim will say that if you put a mecham, a kettle of water, on top of a hot pot, the water in the kettle is going to get boiled. And even if he doesn't intend it'll get boiled, we're afraid it might get boiled. The flip side is very difficult. What's the problem with putting a kedera on top of a mecham? It's almost impossible to imagine that the food in the kedera would ever reach a cooking point just because he put it on top of a kettle. So the Achronim here have a long discussion about this. Frankly, it's way beyond our understanding here. Now, v'toches pia b'botzek. There are different ways that in those days they would cover a vessel. We have lids. But sometimes, if they didn't have a lid, they would actually put a piece of dough on top of the vessel, on top of this kedera, and that would cover it. And that's mutter. We don't assume that the dough is going to get cooked or baked. But all the heterim, all the leniencies that we maintained before, for example, mecham al gabi mecham, etc., that's only if he wants to maintain a certain level of heat, but not to boil it. If his intention is to boil it, and he has the possibility of doing so, that's obviously prohibited. U'kishem shein tomnes hachamin, kach ein tomnes hatzonen. So Rabbi Yehuda was one of those Tanoim, like Rebbe in his original position, before he heard about Rabbi Yossi, that you're not allowed to do atmana even on cold food. Rebbe hitil lahatmana satzonin. Rebbe, after he changed his mind, he allowed hatmana bitzonin, and that's how we paskin la'alocha. And finally, on a different note here, the Bryce ends up, ein merazkin. This is about crushing ice on Shabbos. Ein merazkin lo asashel lo sabar b'Shabbos b'shvil sheyazovu meima. In other words, we want to get water out of the snow. We're not allowed to deliberately crush the water, the snow, in order to get the water, or the ice in order to get the water. I will no seinu el hakos l'toch hakos l'toch hakara v'ein hachoshesh. He's allowed to take ice cubes and put it into a cup of water, a bowl of liquid, and then it will defrost and it will turn into water. It's the only iser of molid, of creating a new substance by creating water out of snow or out of ice, is only when you do it deliberately. or actively, I would say. But if it happens on its own, without any action, that's called Shevi Altas, that's Mutah. Hajan Alecha Perek Bameh Tomden. And now we start the Perek of Bameh Behema Yotzes. So by way of introduction, let's just say the following. Twice in the Torah, we are prohibited from working our animals. First, it says in Shmos Perek Chaf, Lo Taseh Kol Moloch HaTov V'Chol Behemtecha. And second, later on in the same Sefer Shmos, Perek of Gimel, it says, "Ubayom Hashvi Tishmos Leman Yanuach Sharcha V'Chamorecha." So the first case, it's included in a lotas. You're not allowed to actively work your animal. The second case, in an essay of Tishbos, the Torah says that not only should you rest, but also your animal should rest. Now, if you actively work the animal, then you violate the lotas. But what if the animal is carrying something and it goes out into Rishus HaRavim? So you don't violate the lotas because you haven't actively worked the animal. Like, for example, you get the animal to plow a field, that would be a violation of Lo Taseh Kol Melacha Ubehemtecha. But L'man Yanuach, you have to do everything to prevent the animal from working, even if you're not actively working the animal. And that last paragraph is the subject of our Mishnah. Under what situations and what circumstances do we consider that the animal is carrying a burden out in Rishus HaRavim, and therefore we have to stop that from happening? So the Mishnah opens up with two questions. Bameh be'ema yotza, bameh e'ne yotza. What are we going to allow an animal? You don't have to stop the animal because it's carrying something on its body out in Rishus HaRavim. And in what cases are you allowed to let the animal go out? So this Mishnah is going to dedicate itself to what you're allowed to let the animal go out with. And the underlying principle is that things that are attached to the body of the animal, not for the sake of carrying a burden, but in order that the owner of the animal should control the animal. Like, for example, we're going to talk about something called an afsar. Afsar kind of reins, you know, that you tie around the animal's neck and you use it to control the animal. Is Yotzia Gamal B'Afsar. The camel is allowed to go out in Rishus HaRavim, even though it's carrying part of the rein, the part of the reins that are attached to the animal. Now, he has a translation here of the word Afsar as a halter. Unfortunately, I can't find the dictionary here, so I don't know exactly what a halter is, but I think it's what we call reins. So if somebody has an access to a dictionary or maybe online, you can do me a favor and punch in the word halter, because I'm not familiar with that. I mean, to me, a halter is something that a woman wears, like a blouse or something. Anyway, Vinaka, now it's interesting. The male and female camels are very different, one from the other. You would have thought the female camels are more tame, but that's just the opposite is true. The female camels, which is called a naka in singular, is very wild. And it's not enough to put reins on it. You know, you need to control it. Bechatam. What they did was they put a loop around its nose. I actually have a diagram here in the Masifta if you want to see it later on. And then there was another animal, which is called a luvdikin. Well, luvdikin is the plural. A luvdiki. A luvdiki animal, which comes from from a country called Luv, which the Mefarshim identify as Mitzrayim. They had a certain kind of a donkey that was really, really wild. Very strong animal. And the Mishnah allows you to attach, I don't mean it allows you, I mean saying on Shabbos, if the animal goes out with this attachment, which is called frumbia. Frumbia is called a bit in English. It's got a pagi, a base pagi. In other words, it goes around, you know, the nose of the mouth, I should say, of the donkey. And again, I can show you the diagram if you want to see it. Visus bishir, they would put a collar around the neck of a horse in order to control the horse, and that's fine. and let the horse go out with this collar around it. And we're going to discuss cats. Like, what happens if you put a collar around a cat? Not so posh, my friends. Any of you own cats. Dogs is a little bit more posh, but even that's not so posh. But again, all this applies only where there's no Eruv. So you may wonder, as we go through this perek, the whole perek sounds so foreign to us. You know, these different kinds of attachments, because we, you know, here in Eretz Yisrael, certainly in Yerushalayim, and most in, I think, all of Eretz Yisrael, you know, there's no such thing as an area without an Eruv. So the whole issue of this might be moot, especially the next parak, which is called the Me Isha Yotzeis, which has to do with different kinds of ornaments that a woman wears, and she goes out in Rishus HaRabim. All that is based on the Isha of carrying a masa, a burden in Rishus HaRabim. But, you know, again, if you're in Europe, in many, many places, you know, there's no Eruv. So you have to know these halachas. V'chol bali ashir yotzim v'shir v'nimshachim v'shir. So there are a lot of animals, and we'll see which ones as we go through the sugya, that wear a collar. And you're allowed to allow the animal to go out and reshus around with a collar. And not only that, if there's a string, a rope that's attached to the collar in order to pull the animal, that's also mutter, even if there's no eruv. It's a real reshus around. And we're going to have to see exactly why, because you would think that if he's holding on to the reins, so to speak, this rope that pulls the collar, that you're really carrying that. So we have to get a little understanding of that. Umazin aleim. This has to do with what's called hazah and tvila. And the law is that if a kli, let's say a utensil, is in a ohel hames, for one example, but you could have sheretz also, but then the kli is susceptible to tumah, and now you have to put it into the mikvah, or you have to do azah in certain cases, like in a tamei mes. Now the question is, if the animal is wearing a collar, and you have to purify the collar, then will the water be able to sink in to the inside of the collar that's close to the animal's body? Otherwise, if the water can't completely surround the collar in this case, then there's no tefillah. So the Mishnah assumes that the collar is still loose, you know, it's not choking the animal, and therefore the water will actually get in and cover the entire collar. So you don't have to take the collar off of the animal in order to submerge the collar into the mikvah water. The Gemara asks the following: My naka bechatam, Omer Rabba Bar Chana nakasa chivarti. The female camel is very white. Mechuvar is white. Bizmama de parzala. And you put a nose ring around the female camel because it's very wild, very hard to control it. So you put a nose ring around it. It's actually a metal nose ring. That's what they did back in the day. And that's mutter in the case of a female camel. The Luvdikin befrumvia, Amar Avhuna. The Gemara tries to explain with a little bit of a story here about this donkey, which is called a Luv donkey. Chamora Luva, the donkey coming from Luv, bepagi de parzala. As I mentioned before, the bit has a pagi around it. A pagi is that point where the two parts of the bit come together. There's the part of the bit that goes around the animal and the part of the bit that connects to the reins of the animal. That's called a base pagi. So now the Gemara wants to know, what is this donkey that comes from Luv? Levi Shadar Zuzi. Levi sent a packet of money, Lebei Chuzai, from people who lived in a certain area in the middle of Babylonia, and he sent to them in a note, Lemizvan Lechamra Luva, I want to get a hold of this donkey from Luv, because these donkeys are very powerful donkeys. Now, let me just give you a little idea. This place called Luv was very, very far from Bavel, and certainly from the center of Bavel. Some of the Farshim say it would be a 6-month trip to Luv in order to buy this donkey for Levi. So Tsaru, they took the money and they wrapped it up. And Shidru lay Sari. Sari are Saorim, are barley grains. Lememar, as if to tell him, they sent him a message, we're not going there to Luv. No thanks. The Nigre de Chamra Sari. Nigre means the power of the animal to run and jump and move forward depends upon Siori. Now just take any local donkey and feed it the right barley and it'll be fine. You don't need the Luvian donkey. Well, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Machlifin Lifnei Rebbe. They asked the question to Rebbe, Machlifin, Shalzu Bizu Mahu. What happens if the kind of a utensil that would normally be appropriate for one animal was switched, and you use what would classically be to restrain the animal with a different kli. So let's go back to our Mishnah, for example. We can talk about an afsar, and we said that an afsar is fine for a normal camel, let's say a male camel. In the case of the female camel, we need something called a chatam. That was the nose ring. So what happens if he puts a nose ring on a male camel, or he only uses a rein for a female camel? Now, if he uses an afsar for a female camel, for this naka, it's just not going to be enough. The naka is just going to run away. It could break away from the reins, or what he calls a halter here. But in the other case, if he uses a nose chotem for a male camel, then he's overshooting his bounds. He's going way beyond what he normally would need for restraint. And the question always is this a masa? If it's not the appropriate utensil that would be used to control the animal, then it becomes a masa. So Rebbe responds and he says, Naka b'afso loti b'alecha. If you were to take a female camel and try to put on it a classic afsar, then that for sure is going to be a masa. Why? Came into Lomintere Bay, he cannot control the animal and restrain it. Is therefore it's meaningless. Masuihu. It's a burden. Right, we say that what undermines the status of these objects, these utensils as a bird, is the fact that it's used to control the animal. Here it's not going to be worth a dime. Kiti Boiloch, but you do have a very good point, and I don't know the answer to your question, in the following scenario. Gamal Bechato Mau. Here you overshot your bounds by a lot. You know, you would not, you know, pierce a nose ring into a regular camel, a male camel, to control it. Is cave under Sagi Levi Afsa, since all you would need is the reins, Masui, who now for sure it should be a burden. Odilma, should we say no? Nitirusa Yeserso, even though it's an unusual overshooting control of the animal, long reading Masui, we're not going to call it a Masui. It is meaningful. You know, we have a principle in Halacha called Yesh Beklal Masai Mana. You know, you overshot your bounds, but it's still meaningful. You know, if you're going to take a female camel and try to control it with an afsar, that's meaningless. That's a masa. It has no function. You're just not going to be able to control the animal. But the other way, if you want to overshoot your bounds, at least you successfully controlled your animal. Maybe that's enough to consider it as part of the animal, and it's not a masa. Amar lefanav Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Again, we have Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi with Rebbe. And Kachomar Abba, once again, Rabbi Shmuel is quoting his father. Arba behemos yotzos biafsa. There are four species of animals that can go out on Shabbos with an afsa, with this rain. Hasus vapered vagamal vachamor. So we have horses and mules and camels and donkeys. We're going to focus our attention on the camel. Lemute mai. Why did Rabbi Yossi have to say four? You know, only four animals could go out with an afsar. And the answer is lav lemute gamal bechatam. He wants to tell you that in these four cases, and we'll focus on gamal, he's allowed to take it out in Rishus HaRabim, the animal go out in Rishus HaRabim if he's wearing an afsar, but not if he's wearing a chatam, because a chatam is overshooting your protection, your restraint over a male camel. So Rebbe says, no, that's not what your father meant. When he calculated four that go out with an afsar, lo, he wasn't coming to exclude the case of a chatam, but lemutei nako biafsar. To tell you that a gamal is a male camel and not a female camel. And in the case of a female camel, the afsar is meaningless. And therefore it's a masa. For masnisa tana, we have a brisa that says, luvdikin v'gamal yotzim v'afsar. Okay, so you have this mule that came from Luv. And the case of a camel, and you go out with an afsar. Now, this is a little bit of a problem, because we said in the Mishnah that the Luvdikin are very, very active, and they need that bit. And here, he's taking it out with an afsar. So the Mefarshim say that although this Luv donkey, in an ideal state, would require a pumbia, but nevertheless, an afsar would suffice. You know, you could still control the luv donkey with an afsar. So again, let's go back to the question. What happens if you overshoot your bounds? Like, for example, the camel with a nose ring. Ketanoi, the Gemara wants to suggest some machlokas tanoim, and we have a braisa that says, ein chaya yotza besugar, so that an animal, we'll see whether it's a small animal like a cat or a big animal like a bear, does not go out with a sugar. I mean, the sugar is that collar that we spoke about, you know, that's attached to a rope. But Chananya Omer, Yotza b'sugar b'chol dover mishtamer. Chananya says that as long as you can control the animal with this collar and the rope attached to the collar, then it's fine. It's not a masui. B'mayaskinon, what kind of animal are we talking about? Ilem v'chay gedola. If it's a large animal, then like a bear or something like that, how do we understand Chananya? Misagi la sugar, can you just simply put a rope around a bear? I mean, I was in the West once, in Canada, you know, they have, you know, they tell you about the grizzly bears. It took us a week till we finally saw the actual grizzly bear. But in any event, so you're going to tie a rope around the grizzly bear? That's ridiculous. Ela b'chay k'tana, but we must be talking about a cat or some sort of small animal. Is then we don't understand the chachomet. Milo sagile sugar. Is it not enough to put a collar around the cat and a rope attached to the collar? So what exactly is the machlokas here in this braisa between Chananya and the Tanakama? Elolav chatul ika beinayu. You have the case of a cat, and Tanakama sover came into sagile b'misna b'alma. All you need is you don't have to put a collar around the cat, just to tie a rope around the cat. Is therefore the collar itself, misna means the cord, and the collar itself is masuihu. The Chananya Sovar Netirusi Yiseriso Lo Amrina Masuihu. Even though it's not necessary to restrain the cat by putting a collar around its neck, nevertheless, all right, Yesh Baklal Masai Mona. It's not a masu because it does achieve that protection. Omer Avuna Barachia. We can be mekil, and even if we overshoot our bounds and we put on a what's called netirusa yiserta, nevertheless it's not considered a masui. Levi bereid Rav Huna bar Chiyo v'Rabba bar Rav Huna avikaazli beorcha. They were going on the road, and kadme chamra de Levi. Lechamra de Rabba Barafuna. Now, Rabba was the Rebbe of Levi. And yet, you know, you don't go in front of your Rebbe, and Levi shot ahead in front of his Rebbe Rabba while he was on this donkey. And Cholesh Daiti de Rabba Barafuna. And Rabba Barafuna was overwhelmed by this. He thought, Levi doesn't consider me his Rebbe, you know, well, why is he doing something so chutzpahdik? And he's rushing ahead of me. So Levi wants to calm down his Rebbe, Rabbah, and tell him, listen, it wasn't my fault. It was this very, very active donkey that I was riding. So he figured out, I'm going to ask him a question in Halacha so they'll get the message. Now we're on Daf Nun Beis of it all. The Tosif Daite, so he'll be at ease, he'll be calmed down. Amalei, so Levi asked his Rebbe, Chamor Shasok of Royim Kigon Zeh. He says, what happens if you have a donkey that's not behaving properly? It's wild and rebellious, like this donkey of mine. Ma'alot says, Befrubia B'Shabbos. Can we now put a bit around the mouth of the donkey, and there's no Iser? Because in this case, it's an exceptional kind of donkey, and it needs Shmira Yisera, it needs extra protection. Amalei, so Rabbah responded, Hachi Omar Avuch Mishmei de Shmuel, and he quotes the father of Levi, who is another Rav Huna, Rav Huna Bar Chia, who said in the name of Shmuel that Halacha kechananya, and that means even if you have an, if you overshoot the Shmira, that's not a Masui, and that's permissible on Shabbos. But Rabbah got the message that Levi wasn't responsible for shooting ahead of him, but rather it was this wild donkey. So tomorrow, Mirtzah Hashem, will begin the next Amud, four lines down from the top, and that's Nun Beis, continuing in Bamei Behemah Yotzeis.